I'm Franny Benali.
This is Klaus Lundekvam.
I'm Matt Letitia.
Dean Hammond's here.
And you're listening to In That Number.
Here is Letitia.
In That Number with me, Kevin, the Moscow Mush Milverton, and Ray Hunt. Find me on Twitter at Moscow Mush, and my co-host Ray Hunt at RayHunt84. Follow the show at Number Podcasts on Twitter, In That Number Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. If you've got any questions for the show, if you can be bothered, send us an email to InThatNumberPodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Share, subscribe, and give us good vibes. Let's go.
Welcome to a very special episode of ITN. I'm your host, Ray Hunt. This is my co-host, Kevin, the Moscow Mush Milverton. Say hello, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin.
This is episode 134. Kevin, can you reveal the title, please?
Yes, the title is Line of Duty.
That's good. For this, we have a very special guest, current Oxford United and former Saints FC women's forward, Rachel Panting, joining us to discuss her career to date. Kev, I'm really, really looking forward to this one. It's someone that we've had planned for a while now, and now we're finally able to make it happen.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's another in the long line of Saints legends that we've got on the podcast, but it took a move away from Saints to get her on the podcast. Yeah.
That's true. That is true. Shall we get her in now then?
Yeah.
Okay. It gives me great pleasure to welcome in Oxford United women and former Saints FC women's forward, Rachel Panting. Rachel, welcome along to the show.
Hello, and thank you very much for having me.
This is an honour. This is brilliant. As I said, we've been trying to make this happen for a while now.
Yeah, a long time coming, hasn't it? But like you say, we finally managed to get there.
Yes, we did. Firstly, I mean, we know how busy you are, you know, trying to balance your work life, your football, your home life, and giving up your precious time to chat to me and Kev. So, yeah, thank you very much for that.
You're more than welcome.
So how are you anyway? How are you adjusting to your new club and your job in the police?
Yeah, no, all right. I think obviously, well, the last 2 years have been a bit crazy, haven't they? The standard pandemic talk, etc. So yeah, for me, obviously, with the job that I'm in, it's been a bit different, a bit unusual. But yeah, no, sort of. I think at the moment you tend to take things day by day and hope that eventually our new normal will eventually kick in.
And your job with the police, can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, so I mean, I was frontline, so used to drive around on the blues and twos, which I always thoroughly enjoyed.
Oh, wow.
But now I've gone into a more sort of office based role, which I took up mainly because of football, to be able to obviously accommodate football a little bit better than what the 24/7 shifts were. This one is still shift work, but it's just not overnight and bits and pieces like that. So I will do the reviews of the investigations that have been completed by the officers. So once they've gathered all of the evidence, I have to provide a rationale and basically make the decision whether we take it forward to court, whether we drop it, or whether I send them back to do even more work. So it's quite interesting. Obviously, it's very different day to day. You get all sorts of different jobs and everything. So it keeps my mind active while the football keeps my physical side active.
That's amazing. That does sound really good. Are you based in Oxford?
No. So I'm Berkshire way. I'm Reading.
Oh, OK.
But yeah, based in Thames Valley, work wise.
Aha. OK, I'm with you.
Yeah, I just wanted to take our listeners on the Rachel Panting journey, so to speak. So I wanted to ask about your interest and love of football. Where did that come from growing up?
So I've pretty much been playing football since I was about 5 years old, I think it was, or even maybe a little bit younger than that, sort of 4 years old. It's heavily through my dad. So my dad used to play when he was younger, and like his brothers and my granddad as well, really, really into football. But also my next door neighbour, who's a little bit younger, he grew up footy mad as well. So, of course, from a very young age, we used to just always be down the field playing football together, and sort of quite traditional in terms of when I was younger, my dad used to be my manager at like my first football club, Thatcham Tornadoes. So it's very much centred around my dad and the influence of sort of like the next door neighbour being really involved in it as well. But yeah, it's been a very long time that I've been playing it. But yeah, no, that's the biggest influence, and that's sort of like the start of my football journey, so to speak.
You grew up as a Fulham fan, I understand, in Berkshire. How did that come about?
Yeah, so again, that's heavily influenced through my dad. So actually, this is probably quite an appropriate story. So when my dad was younger, he got taken to a football game, and it was Southampton versus Fulham.
Woohoo!
All right.
Yeah, the coincidence. And effectively,
he chose Fulham.
They were that good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a 50-50% chance of it being Southampton or Fulham, and he went Fulham. No. he just decided randomly to support the away team, and it happened to be Fulham on that occasion. And he said that he just really enjoyed the way that Fulham played, and he's stuck with them ever since. And I mean he's been a supporter probably sort of 55 plus years now, and I'd say because he was such a big influence on me within football, it was sort of a no-brainer that as soon as he found out I was into football, he was going to put a Fulham shirt on me, and the rest is kind of history from there. So yeah, no, I've got like great memories with my dad, and my mum has come along to a few games as well. She gets dragged along sometimes.
So you still go to Craven Cottage?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't been for a couple of years because of obviously everything that's been going on and things. But yeah, we had a period of time where we were a season ticket holder, my dad and I. And sort of now with obviously like other commitments and everything like that, it's more a bit ad hoc, but we try and get to a few games a year. And obviously naturally anytime they're on Sky, it always makes me happy because I get to watch them then. So yeah, no, we're avid Fulham fans.
So who were your footballing idols as a child?
So in terms of Fulham, when I was a mascot 1 year, we played Ipswich, and it was the most boring game ever. It was a nil-nil, typical. But at that time, my favourite footballer was Paul Pesciolido.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So I was tiny. I was really, really small when I was younger. It probably wasn't until I was in sort of like year 9 and 10 that I had a growth spurt. I was so small that I had to wear one of those little bands when I went to Thorpe Park to say I wasn't tall enough for any of the rides.
Oh, no.
And obviously Paul Pesciolido was really small, so I think that's probably why he was my favourite one. But yeah, I've had like Fulham players, sort of the likes of like Steve Malbronk, Clint Dempsey, Chris Coleman, Moussa Dembele, all of those like were sort of ones that I always used to enjoy watching. But in terms of away from Fulham, it tended to be the likes of standard ones, really, like David Beckham. Although I like Cristiano Ronaldo, I am more Team Messi. But also sort of like your Henri, Scholes, Giggs, Lampard, all of those sorts of ones.
All the legends,
yeah. All the ones that everyone knows. So
Letizia. So yeah.
he was phenomenal. But yeah, I think to be fair, like obviously as a kid, if you support a team, you tend to just focus on them a bit more and then know all of the other famous ones. You don't tend to know a lot of the other sort of ones in between, do you? So
no, yeah.
But yeah, I was just always footy mad, so you know, anyone and everything were sort of up there in terms of being some sort of role model in some regards.
I just want to talk about the women's game in general. This season, it seems to be getting more noticed, and it just seems to be blowing up. I mean, this is only my opinion. I mean, the Super League is getting so much coverage now, and we had the Manchester Derby broadcast live on BBC last week.
Yeah.
And it seems that more and more people are watching, getting involved, having more opinions. And, you know, hopefully this spills down to the lower leagues of women's football as well, which will be amazing to see. Does this make you proud to be playing in an era where it's starting to take off?
Yeah, definitely. I think when I look back and reflect on way back when I was at Reading, obviously at that point they were playing in sort of like a high league, but it never seemed possible that it would be within my era that clubs would even turn professional. I think it sort of seemed as if it was way, way off and would never sort of hit that. So for me to even be involved still in football when you've got a fully professional league, and then obviously within the Championship you've got part and part, part-time and full-time, is ridiculous. And I think it does show how far football, women's football, has come along. And I think it's only the start, and it's good. It's very good. I think with anything, when it sort of obviously involves things like pay and everything like this, it's always difficult, and it always comes mm-hmm. with its own individual problems. But the one thing I really personally hope stays is, I guess, that different sense of environment. You know, when at games, you always see all the kids about, and they're obviously quite heavily involved in the club. So obviously with men's football, yes, obviously one of the children might be able to sort of be a mascot or see the players as they come and go. But I think it's that little bit more involved in women's football. And I think that makes it a bit different and adds a bit of a special touch. And I really hope that that is something that stays, that sort of more interactive engagement with friends, family, but also the fans. I think that's really nice. But yeah, to see, obviously, you know, they've got the Women's Super League now on Sky. They've got the Monday night Women's Super League, the catch up of all the games. Like you say, the BBC, obviously, like the international football. I mean, you've got the women's international football on FIFA now, haven't you? And stuff.
Yep.
So it's incredible to see. And I really do hope it is the start of something that's going to continue to flourish and continue to grow.
I think it will. Yeah, I think it's only the start of it. And I've been meaning to get to a game this season and stuff, but I'm usually talking to Kev about a drab Saints game on a Sunday, so it's difficult to get there.
We should start a podcast about the women's team.
Trust me, I've thought about it. I have thought about it. It's not just the broadcaster games as well. It's like women in the sport is getting more and more presenters and the pundits. Like, you've got Alex Scott taking over the reins of Football Focus. And I mean, during the Euros, we had the Chelsea manager, Emma Hayes, doing some commentary and punditry, who was outstanding, by the way. I thought she was absolutely brilliant. And her also, we've just...
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And we've just seen an all-female officiating team for the England-Andorra game in a World Cup qualifier. So this is all... It's massively important, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And it's, I think it's only a matter of time so we see a female manager in the men's Premier League.
Part of me thought that it might happen with Emma Hayes, but she seems quite firmly rooted with Chelsea, which I completely understand. But maybe one day it might be her or
Newcastle. Steve Bruce is on borrowed time by the sounds of it, but yeah.
Has Newcastle got enough money to pay her?
isn't there a slight irony for the Saudis taking over Newcastle and appointing a woman as manager?
Yeah, true.
How has the women's game changed from when you started playing to now?
Well, obviously, as we've just touched upon, in terms of the general media around it and everything, that's skyrocketed. You know, even the likes of things like Twitter, which is obviously, I think, massive for women's football and boosting it and getting it out there. You know, you look back at what previously used to be put up on Twitter, you know, it was sort of every now and again you might see a post or what have you, whereas now it's constant throughout the day where there's updates, and, you know, the professional teams will have media that control that side of it and are paid to do that, which, you know, is massive and was never there beforehand. It would have just been someone voluntarily, etc. So yeah, that side is sort of just crazy, crazy different. I think in terms of, obviously, you've then also got the other side, like the facilities and what clubs can now offer you. I think it's really nice to see, even like definitely tier three, but even tier four, you're seeing teams that have got physios, they've got sports scientists, you know, some have got like psychologists and things like this. And it's showing, I think that does show the depth in women's football now, because everything filters down, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously the top tier, you've kind of almost nailed that in terms of with that has got it all. And then obviously the second tier, it's then got it all, but a little bit less. And then it's going down that way. So to see that there's growth even in sort of the likes of tier four and above is really good. So I think that does show, especially in highlights, that the growth is working well, that it is filtering down the leagues, maybe a bit slower than some might want, but it is still there. So yeah, so things like the facilities, like the coaching, the support that you get is definitely a lot more than what it ever was when I was a bit younger and what have you. So I always think there's more that can be done on that side, and only time will tell whether that will happen. But I think from a woman's perspective and from being involved in it from sort of a young age upwards, we're just grateful to play and we're grateful to have opportunities and to be given those sorts of things. I think, you know, sometimes things can be taken for granted, but to me personally, I think a lot of women are extremely appreciative of things like being allowed to train on grass rather than having to, you know, find a park or something like that. So it's the small things that have made a big difference.
So I just wish it would filter down to your division, because whenever we're podcasting on a Sunday and the, you know, the games are all kicking off around 2 o'clock ish and we're trying to find the scores and we cannot find anything. It's so difficult.
The club doesn't do any live commentary on any of the social media that I've noticed. Hopefully the promotion will change that.
Yeah, so many people are sort of crying out for that, aren't they? But yeah, whether that will come next year, who knows? But yeah, that would be something that would be really beneficial and another aspect of growing the game. Most clubs obviously do that, and sometimes you might find that you're better off going into the opposition's Twitter feed or something.
I've done that many times. I still can't find enough, so I have to get Kev to do stuff like that. But yeah.
It's embarrassing, yeah, that you know, Chichester and Selsey can do it, but Saints can't.
Yeah.
Back on your journey through women's football, yeah, I mean, you started off at Reading as a teenager, is that right?
Well, under 10, so just even prior to, yeah, being a teenager, but throughout the teenage years, yeah, sort of went up through their academy into the women's side.
What was it like there at Reading? Was it did they have decent facilities when you started?
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, again, it was sort of on what was 3G back then, so sort of like, you know, the ones with the sand.
yes
yeah.
Yeah, so we it tended to sort of be training on sort of places like that and what have you, but the pitches that we played on were always pretty good, but yeah, I can't fault the coaching and what we did get offered at Reading. I mean, back then I remember there was one year where it's probably sort of like under 14s or something, where the women's team for the season got given £500.
Oh, for the whole team, goodness.
Yeah. And they said that the boys equivalent or something were getting like £5,000. So it just shows the difference. And, you know, I mean, it will obviously be won't be the case like that anymore, but it's, yeah, something that sort of just springs to mind that even, yeah, like that was probably what, 15 years ago or so. And you know, even to think of that much of a difference back then, that's crazy, isn't it? But
gotcha.
But yeah, no, it was good. Like, yeah, the coaching was really good. Like playing alongside some great players. I was there when like the likes of Fran Kirby was there and stuff. So
oh, wow.
I guess that's a slight small claim to fame.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it sort of helped develop me, set me up nicely, and it was in a way, I mean, whether I would have ever stayed long term at Reading, but the reason for leaving Reading was for the career and to focus on the police side of things. So otherwise, who knows whether I would have been one of their longest serving players or anything like that. I don't know. But yeah, no, it set me up nicely.
And that move was to Maidenhead, sorry.
Yeah, so I initially took a bit of a break from football solely because of obviously focusing on the career side. And as I said, because I was going into 24/7 work, it just didn't initially work. So I sort of had to almost take a step back from football to focus on the job. And it got to the point where obviously I was missing playing football, and initially managed to sort of combine the two a little bit. And at the time, Maidenhead were in, I think it was tier four, which is what they're still in. It was either tier four or tier three. But yeah, so sort of a bit more local, and then obviously progressed further and further afield from there.
Yeah, I mean, the next step was, I understand the team that I'm forbidden to mention on this podcast.
Beginning with P, just say that.
That's the one.
Pretty politely, yeah. How did that move come about?
That was literally in terms of the manager approached me at the end, or just before the start of pre-season, and asked me to come along for a trial. So went along and on the same day got sort of handed the piece of paper to sign straight away. So yeah, it was nice, because I think at the point of when I was at Maidenhead, I think I got mentally to a point where I sort of closed the door on being able to progress further within football, and sort of thought that, you know, there wasn't really going to be much more opportunity for me. So you know, at the time they are still obviously in tier three, but that's where they were at the time as well. I never thought I'd make it back up to sort of those higher levels. So to have had that interest, it sort of, I guess, restarted and re-kicked sort of the next stages of the football journey, really. So no, it was probably a good move for me, and sort of allowed me to then progress to where I am now.
I'm glad you're calling it a progression, definitely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there aren't many players that have moved across the A27?
M27.
Yeah, M27.
Well, at least you did it the right way around, though, the progression.
Yeah.
Definitely.
There you go.
I mean, was there any difficulty with that move?
No, I think, like the word progression, in terms of it was a decision that was right for me, and for me to be able to then develop further and to be somewhere like Southampton, it was an incredible experience, incredible journey, and one that has given me so many good memories, and something that I am so happy I did. So no, it wasn't difficult at all, because it was, Southampton's been the only club that I've been at where I felt like a professional without being paid like a professional. It really did open up my eyes to sort of feel as if I was in a completely professional environment, and it was great to be a part of it. And it was sad that it obviously came about when obviously all of the COVID kicked off and everything like this, because it would have been nice to have had those two sort of solid seasons of pure success. We still had that, but obviously it was slightly taken away from us because of the derailments of the leagues and everything like that. So but no, it was the right move, and it was one that I was never going to turn down.
The best move of your career.
Best definitely. Move. Yeah, no, I would describe it as that, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And you've scored some bouters for Saints. That one against Coventry United. Was it Coventry United? Yeah, in front of the front of the fans at St Mary's, and the knee slide celebration, and that was a great goal. And then you've got another one against Lewis. That was a wonder strike. You don't score tap-ins, do you?
No, I very rarely have scored a tap-in. I think I'm the sort of player that...
Like Shay Adams?
When the ball comes across a goal and it's like 2 yards out, I'll probably balloon it over the crossbar. I'm more sort of a 25-yard screamer. Rather than a tapping kind of girl.
I mean, which is your favourite? Is it that one against Coventry that got goal of the season?
They both got goal of the season, didn't they?
They both got
goals. Yeah, they did both. But yeah, I think the surrounding aspects of that, in terms of with it being at St Mary's, I had sort of like my family in the crowds. There was something like over 4,000 fans there. It definitely is a moment that I'll never forget, and one that I'll always cherish and be able to sort of tell the grandchildren, if ever there are any. But yeah, it's one of those that as soon as it left my foot, I just knew it was going in. And yeah, even thinking about it now, it's like a little bit emotional in terms of like remembering back to it. And yeah, that was definitely a career highlight, one of them.
Yeah, it's the stuff of dreams, and I think I still have dreams about doing that.
Just you still got time.
It's going at St. No, I haven't now. Trust me. at St. Mary's, smashing in a 30-yarder or something. It's just like, yeah, it's the stuff of dreams. I think I've closed that chapter now.
Okay.
Don't think I'm ever going to get to that level.
You can always, obviously, with like photo editing and stuff, you can always edit your face onto mine. And make it
yes.
Why haven't we thought of this?
Deepfake, yeah.
Yes. God, though, the last time we played football, Kev, was that five-a-side game, wasn't it, just before COVID?
God, that nearly killed me. Yeah.
Yes. I remember it well, yeah.
I mean, obviously, the highlights and the goals and everything, and the promotion that wasn't to be, but then was. Your move to Oxford, which is just happened recently, took us all by surprise.
Yeah, I think it was very tough. It was a very, very hard decision, and one that obviously I didn't do lightly. It was sort of a couple of weeks in the making of processing and thinking. But yeah, ultimately, just I obviously live a bit of a distance from Southampton, and that, alongside work and alongside the general life, work-life balance and everything, it's got to a point where it was not feasible for me to continually week in, week out give that 100% commitment that the club needs and that I would want to give. So yeah, sort of even thought about stopping full stop. It was one of those where it was I just had to do something to get back into the enjoyment of football, because of the other aspects in my life sort of causing it to not be the same, let's say. So yeah, it was an extremely tough decision, and I think that's part of the reason, was because like the players, they were like a second family to me. Like they're a great bunch of girls. Can't fault any of them. They're all total legends in my eyes. So yeah, it was really difficult, but it was the right decision for me. And essentially, the main thing was that I had to put myself first, which is what I did.
Sure. Yeah.
Probably a bit of a shock, because yeah, it wasn't necessarily perhaps expected by anyone, and obviously with it being so recent into the start of the season and everything. But yeah, it was sort of had to be done.
Yeah, I think Kevin, you broke that news to me. I was on the way back from St Mary's actually, and you got a message on my phone from Kevin. It was Rachel Panton's gone to Oxford, and I was like, no. And I think I messaged you afterwards and said, no, it's not. Yeah. And then yeah, then you explained it all there and stuff. So yeah, it was a shock for me and for Kevin, for everyone really. But yeah, how are you settling in at your new club, and how are you finding your teammates?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's different, obviously, and I think that's been part of, like, perhaps the hardest adjustment is you get so used to a club, and where with Southampton you are so heavily involved. It's a massive, massive commitment, and it is almost like having a full-time job alongside a full-time job. So it's difficult when you come out of that situation, out of that club, it's difficult to adjust to any other club. So it's taken a little bit of time, but I picked up a knock in my first training session, which meant I couldn't play the first game that I was sort of eligible to play. So that was always a great start. And of course they train on 4G. And I think my feet have taken a little bit of time to adjust to that, because it's so different. Like, obviously with Southampton, we were up at Staplewood training on the grass every night, and then obviously it was very rare that we would play on Astro. It just, obviously, if it happened to be the away team, didn't have a grass pitch sort of thing. So yeah, it's amazing. Like, I've had to buy sort of like insoles for my boots and everything to sort of help my feet a little bit more, because I was pretty much every training session I was like rolling my ankles and that. Aww. So so there's had to be a little bit of adjustment, but no, it's good. It's nice to sort of, you know, be still involved in football, and they're a great bunch of girls too. Hopefully.
Are you looking forward to playing them in December?
Yeah, I think part of it will be just like excited to see everyone again. I speak to loads of them still, and we'll catch up in person at some point again in the future and what have you. But yeah, it'll be lovely to see everyone.
Panting Derby, that's what we're going to call it.
December
the 5th, Saints go to Oxford on December the 5th.
Yeah, so no, it'll probably be a little bit of an emotional day to some extent, but yeah, it'll be really nice, be really good, and hopefully, you know, it goes the right way. I won't say anymore.
Yeah, the right way.
I'm torn now.
Yeah. Oh, and also, yeah, you have to wait till the penultimate game of the season for your return to the Snow Stadium, and that's on the 10th of April when the Saints play Oxford. What's going to happen if you score against Saints? Are you going to do like the knee slide and like, kiss the badge and stuff?
No.
Make sure you save that for when you make coffee.
No, I think that 100%, if I score, it will be one of those where it will be a no celebration, like out of respect. I mean, I couldn't do it to the players or the club, like everything that they've done for me and everything like that. There's no way. No, it will. Obviously, I love scoring, so
it's going to be difficult.
I would happily take scoring. I'm not going to go that far as that I would purposely miss or anything like that. I'd definitely be respectful.
Oxford are currently seventh in the National League South, but you know, only played seven, and Gillingham above have played 10, so they're having a good season as well. And there's still a lot of games, because a lot of games have been postponed as well, hasn't there?
Yeah, I think if the two games in, I think they've got two games in hand over quite a few teams, which would then put them up to fourth if they won both of them. So, and only 1 point behind third sort of thing. So yeah, no, I think that they were disappointed. They lost to Chai. I think that was like their third game in or what have you. So they were really disappointed about that that result. And that probably would have made a bit of a difference as to where they would be in the league. They've done all right. I think look at some of the results in the league this season. Like, they've been so up and down, like the likes of Gillingham. You know, they went and beat Portsmouth the other week, didn't they? And then they'll go and lose to someone that you would expect them to then beat. So I don't think anyone's losing to them. So, they started off all right. As I say, I think they were very disappointed by the Chai loss, but. They're doing all right.
Quick word on the men's team. What have you made of them this season?
Well, been a bit slow, hasn't it? Probably the nicest way of putting it. It's difficult. I think they started so explosive last year, didn't they? And then they really struggled. And whether it's going to be the flip reverse this year, who knows?
I'll take that.
Yeah, I think a lot of fans would, wouldn't they? But yes, you see year on year, there's teams that are constantly developing and progressing. And I guess in a way, like the men's side has sort of plateaued a little bit, haven't they?
Yeah, it's not great at the moment. Not a great watch.
No, got a couple of youngsters, haven't they, that are coming through and doing well. Tino's probably been the best player so far, hasn't he?
Been great, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you see the team often? Did you get to socialise with them at all?
No, we had a Christmas event together. That must have been back in 2019.
Oh, wow.
It would have been pre-COVID.
Mm.
So we had an event there where the club players, staff sort of thing were all there. But that was the only occasion, and they would have obviously continued that had it have not been for the pandemic. So I don't know obviously what the situation is this year, whether they'll look to reintroduce that or what have you. But no, there wasn't like much interaction. You might have seen them in passing, but I do think perhaps that would have been a bit different had the pandemic not come about. When I look back to 2019, like that was something that they almost seemed as if they were building on.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, you know, when that was, there was red zones within the training ground, etc., where you just weren't allowed to go and bits and pieces like that. So it probably put a bit of a step back on that side of things.
That would have been good to be at a Christmas party with them, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think it was a case of that they stuck together and we stuck together.
Go and sit next to Stuart Armstrong and go and stroke his hair or something. I think I would have done that and then got kicked out, but yeah.
Not for the restraining order, yeah.
And just quickly, a word on your dog. Now,
yep.
I've seen that you've caved and you started an Instagram page.
Yeah, so we took her to the groomers the other day. So she got a little... she got a blueberry face mask and she got like obviously a full groom and everything. And when we went and picked her up afterwards, they were saying how lovely she was and how awesome she was. And they were like, oh, what's her Instagram page? And we were like, oh, she doesn't have one. They were like, oh, you've got to start one. So it was them that kind of forced us into doing it. We were fighting against being those sorts of pet owners that start the Instagram page for their dogs or what have you. But yeah, we have caved and she's got her own little page now.
she is lovely, and I love the llama. That was so cute.
Yeah, she literally is obsessed with it. Do you know what, the first time that the llama went in the washing machine and I sort of put it down for her, she knew. She looked at me, she gave me such evils as if to say, what have you done with my llama?
No.
But yeah, no, so no, she's lovely. She's really cute. And obviously fills me with a lot of joy.
Yeah, I want to see more pictures. It's great. Kev's not on Instagram, so Kev, I have to send you some
forward them on.
Some Iggy pictures, yeah.
Yeah, go on, spam me up.
I will do it.
Well, yeah, we've got some quick fire questions about your former Saints teammates.
Yeah.
Whoever comes to mind. We'll take turns in firing at you.
Oh, okay.
So take a deep breath each. Okay, fastest teammate?
Ella Morris.
Slowest?
Shannon Sivright.
Best trainer?
Can I pick two?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say Phoebs and Shelley.
Okay, you know you can say you for these as well, don't you?
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I'll stick with what I've done so far.
Okay, your best mate?
Oh, that's quite tough. There's loads of them that I could pick. I could literally pick them all. But if I had to just pick one, that would probably be Phoebs. It's tight. Yeah. It's tight.
Hardest shot?
I'd say Lucia. Her quads are ridiculous. So I reckon she probably would have the hardest out of everyone.
Funniest?
That would be me.
Future manager?
Probably would say Caitlin and Kirsty. Top two of that one.
Messiest?
Well, we're not really a messy team. I say we're not.
More of a Ronaldo team.
Yeah.
I like it, Kev.
Oh. Yeah, no, like after games, we'll clear up, put everything in the bin and stuff.
Oh, I guess, how different.
Yeah. I guess perhaps I have to probably pick on like one of the youngsters, like Sophia or Alicia or something like that. Like,
oh, actually, as you said, Sophia, how do you pronounce her surname quickly?
Sophia Farah.
Okay, because I keep on getting it wrong.
I probably now said it wrong, but I think that is right.
Okay, we've had discussions Farah. About it before. I'm like, yeah, Faroe. I don't know.
Faroe.
Yeah. I would always say Farah, and she's never corrected me, so let's go with that.
Okay, I feel comfortable doing that on the pod now. Okay, that's fine. We're there.
You can always say it afterwards, as stated by Rich Pannon.
Yep.
And just, yeah, blame me for it. That's fine.
The smartest.
Maybe, well, I know a few of them are doing degrees. I think Alicia got like some ridiculous scores in her A-levels that she just did. I was pretty good at school. Let's go with Alicia.
All right. We can get both of you on to do a quiz and settle it for good.
Oh, okay. No, I wouldn't. I'm not good at quizzes.
But... Oh, we'll do a football quiz. I'm sure you'd be good at that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too bad at that.
Yeah. Right. Just a few questions to end with. What are your goals for the rest of the season with Oxford?
I think I always set like individual personal goals, like in terms of assists and goals and themselves. But yeah, I think mainly like I'm at the stage of my career where I just want to enjoy my football and, you know, keep working hard, keep doing everything that I can on the pitch to sort of stay fit and active. So yeah, I probably will be, you know, aiming for a certain amount of goals, certain amount of assists, and then anything else that comes on top of that will be a bonus, really.
I mean, are Oxford targeting promotion this season, or do they have like a goal as a team?
Yeah, their intention is for promotion, but we'll wait and see if that happens.
I mean, it's tough this season, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very tough. Obviously, with two losses, it's going to be like can't really lose anymore sort of thing. But yeah, you never know. Like in the league is throwing up some, you know, unusual results or results you're not expecting and everything. So it's not impossible. Yeah, wait and see what happens.
Okay. I mean, do you still get nervous before games?
Yeah, a little bit. Like I've always had that I would get a few nerves, and I always think that it's actually quite a good thing. I think it sort of in a weird way helps settle you a little bit more and doesn't make you be like complacent or anything like that. So yeah, I do tend to have a little bit of nerves, especially sort of like at the moment, because obviously I'm in like a new environment, and sort of feel a little bit more, or I'm putting a little bit more pressure on myself and everything. So yeah, definitely at the moment it's probably more nerves than what I normally would, but yeah, pretty much every game day I'll have some.
Do you have a special way to channel them?
I think I always like to give myself a couple of minutes before a game where I just sort of sit and I'll visualize in my head. Like it might be that I'll visualize like someone passes a ball and I take like an awesome touch, or someone plays a through ball and I'm one-on-one, and like, I'll visualize myself taking it around the keeper or putting it top bins or something like this. So I tend to have like a couple of minutes where I have these visualizations of something that I want to do when I'm on the pitch. So that normally tends to help. Obviously nowadays everyone has the music blasting pre-match and everything, so that sometimes helps as well. If there's a good tune that comes on, I sort of have a little sing song to that, and that, yeah, that helps.
That's actually my next question, is like you zone out before games and stuff and listen to a bit of music, and what sort of music do you listen to before a kickoff?
It's anything and everything, to be honest with you. Like weirdly sometimes I'll play sort of like more softer like love songs and everything like that, and
oh wow,
yeah, and other times I might be blasting out like a bit of Eminem or something like that. So yeah, I don't think I have like a set routine in that regard. It's just literally whatever I feel like on the day, or whatever playlist pops up on Spotify, I'll just, yeah, pop it on and see how it rolls.
What about you with that one, Kev? What would you do?
Heavy metal.
Yeah, same here. I'd go for a little bit of Slipknot or something like that and just get get wound up. That'd be brilliant.
Get
but yeah.
Nordic on their asses.
Yes.
Headbangers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I'm a bit weird. I don't know.
No, why not? I mean, it kind of... There is a... I just imagine kind of juxtaposition, like in Grand Theft Auto, where you get in the mafia car and they've got opera on.
Yeah. Yeah, I flick through the channels of Grand Theft Auto and I'm sure one of each of the songs on the radio that come on will be something that I've listened to pre-game.
Okay, I mean, this is going to be a tough question, but who's the best player that you've ever played with and who's the best player you've ever played against?
Probably, well, as I say, when I was younger and even back then, like, Fran Kirby was ridiculous. Mm. And she's probably one of the greatest women footballers out there. And, you know, even now she's still progressing and developing and doing really well for herself. So I guess she would probably certainly be up there as one of them. I mean, me personally, I think Ella Morris is so good. So playing with her and like back when I reflect back to the first season at Saints, quite often I would play down the right wing and obviously she would be right back and I really enjoy playing with her. Like I think we linked up quite well and sort of had quite a good understanding of each other and I think she'll go really far with her football career and I hope she does. I hope she gets a chance to play for England women's first team and bits and pieces like that. So yeah, those two would probably be the two that I would say. In terms of against, so when I had my short spell with Lewis, we played Man United and that was the...
And Ronaldo came on.
Yeah, Cristiano Ronaldo popped his head up. yeah, that was the game that they ended up winning the title to go up to the Super League. But yeah, Lauren James was really good. So yeah, I probably perhaps would say her as the against.
Do you have a football hero from the women's game?
Probably say that was Kelly Smith. Yeah, when I was younger, she came to one of like our presentation evenings at Reading and sort of handed out like awards and everything like this. And I think obviously when I look back to when I was younger, she probably was the main person that I would hear about in the women's game.
She was at Arsenal, wasn't she?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, she was a quality footballer. I've like read her autobiography and that, and yeah, like the things that she's been through and things she would probably be my female football idol.
Yeah, my final question. Southampton women's team have had fantastic winning run this season, the last, and we've been on the right end of the 9-0s for once. I mean, are there any advice that you could give to the men's side to help from this season?
Find where the net is and score.
Yeah.
Yeah, they seem to have forgotten.
Yeah, I guess in Southampton women probably would all be the first to say that they know that they've probably played all of the lower end of the table at the moment and that they've got much tougher games to come. But I think the main thing with the women's team is there's like a massive unity there and they all work hard for each other. They all have a lot of pride in playing for the badge, and not by any means am I saying that that's not the case for the men, but I think sometimes, you know, you should always remember and be proud of the shirt that you're putting on. But yeah, definitely, I think they need to sort of put their shooting boots on, tighten their laces maybe a little bit tighter and get some more goals.
Yeah, we all want to see that. We all want to see it, especially on Saturday. I don't want to see another goalless game.
But that's the thing. Fans love goals, don't they? You know, even if it finishes...
I don't know. I can't remember what they're like.
Yeah, I think although... You know, people always want to win. If you see like 8 goals in a game, you know you've been to a good game, haven't you? So
you know you've been to a Saints women game.
Well, yeah. But yeah, no, I think that's as say. You know, I've not been directly around the men's team or what have you. But yeah, within the women's, like, they've got such passion and dedication and commitment to play for the badge and to play for each other, that hopefully that is with the men's. But perhaps if it's not, that might be something that they need to interject.
Excellent. Kevin, do you have anything else?
That's it for me. I did have another question, but it's completely escaped my memory. But yeah,
happens quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, thank you very much for coming on. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, massive thank you to you for coming on and sparing us your precious time to chat with us. It's been really, really good.
No, it's good. Well, yeah, like, obviously if you want to do another one at any point, like end of the season or something, if you have me back, I'm more than happy.
Yeah, come on every week. Kev can go.
See you later, Kev.
No, yeah, absolutely, that'd be amazing. And yeah, best of luck to Oxford. I hope you have a fantastic season with them, and good luck to Fulham as well. I hope they can get back to the Premier League again.
Yeah, fingers crossed for success all round, eh?
Yeah, Fulham and Saints swap places probably, but yeah.
Technically we want Saints to stay up as well, don't we? So
we certainly do. But yeah, anyway, thank you so much for coming on. It's been brilliant.
No, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic, thanks. Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up the Saints.
Up at Southampton.